Welcome to Disrupt Disruption, a series of intimate interviews with global thought leaders and practitioners operating at the intersection of business, leadership, and technology. We're discussing all things innovation and disruption and how to not only survive but thrive in these times of exponentially accelerating change. Trusted by CEOs, founders, and leaders globally for the latest take on business models, methods, culture, and leadership, we cut to the chase, debunk the hype, and get real. You're in great company. I'm your host, Pascal Finette, co-founder of Be Radical. Hey, everybody, this is Pascal. I am back with another episode of Disrupt Disruption today with a dear friend of mine, an incredible public speaker, a brilliant mind, Hannah Tucker. Hannah is the director of Balance Point Ventures out of London in the UK. She's also the founder of Disruption Dinners. We'll put links to both organizations into the show notes because you definitely have to check them out. Huge fan of Disruption Dinners. Very unique, very disruptive. She also does all of her research, or much of her research, in collaboration with the Cambridge Institute for Sustainability Leadership and RethinkX. Hannah, it's so good to have you here. Hannah, you have a very interesting perspective on the world of disruption. You've done a ton of research. Your white paper on the future of food is the one white paper we recommend to everybody, as in read this if you want to know what the future of food looks like. But your work spans much broader than just food. You do a lot of work on sustainability and the disruption in that space. To get us started, how do you, for yourself, how do you think about, how do you define disruption? What is your starting point for your work, for your perspective?
Sure. So the framework I use is to think about how disruptive developments are reshaping the economy. And I see it coming from two different sources. So surrounding the economy, we have social and environmental conditions, and there are major disruptions going on. My work in this started from climate as the main source of disruption that I was looking at as a reshaper of the economy. But that's just the surrounding context of the economy. Within it, you have informational and technological capabilities, which are also going through a period of profound advancements, shaking up the way we do everything. So in my work, I like to think of this holistic framework where both conditions and capabilities are co-evolving, coming together as a disruptive force to transform the economy, and within the economy, businesses themselves.
Talking about businesses, I'm curious, as you talked about the broader picture of disruption, climate, for example, do you see businesses at large, and I know that you consult with businesses, you speak to businesses, do you see businesses at large taking this into account, into actual practical account, as in, here's how we're thinking about the broader context and not just the micro context of technology X is useful in our business and it might change the way we're thinking about our business?
So on climate and how it impacts businesses, what I was observing in my old role as an investor was that businesses were thinking of climate change in terms of morality, or from sort of the traditional CSR perspective of this is something we should take into account and look to reduce our contribution to the climate crisis in order to be a good actor as a business. But what's actually the major risk to businesses is how disruptive changes in climate are impacting their ability to continue to do what it is they do, particularly around supply chains. So, for example, on food, a beef company may think, oh, I really need to take into account climate change because beef is seen as a contributor to the climate crisis. But I think that the real business strategy question is, how are extreme weather events around the world going to impair my ability to create the beef-based foods that I depend upon going forward? So it's both of those coming together, but that's what I often see getting missed out of the equation, is just how severe changes in climate already are and how those are disrupting business operations everywhere and how to prepare for those.
In your last research report, which again, we're going to link to in the show notes because I think it's very well worth reading, you talk a lot about a systems thinking approach to these problems. I'm curious, systems thinking based approaches have been around for a while. I think they're really inherently hard to implement just because they are complex by definition. How do you practically go about, when you are a business, when you are a leader, how do you go practically about, say, in our case, the beef company, to think about those things, not get overwhelmed by them, and start implementing them?
So my view on systems thinking is it's a big game of connect the dots. So connect as many dots of all of the developments occurring around you as you can. And then I think the other component of it is identifying where it is we all are in the system. So if you think of the economy again as our system, if you're a business, where do you sit inside that economy? And part of my view is that we're in this moment of time where we're transforming the economy. We're moving from the old industrial system that we've known all of our lives towards a new modern system. So first question is, your business inside the economy, do you sit within the old industrial system, or are you a company that's forming part of the new modern system? And then once you identify that place, going back to changing conditions and capabilities, how are those impacting you at all levels? Which ones are headwinds? Which ones are tailwinds? And then with that sort of map of positioning, we can begin to think about repositioning within that in terms of forming the business strategy.
Say a little bit more about how you think about the modern, the new world, the transformed economy. I know that you've got an interesting model around this, an interesting way to think about it, which I think is very unique. I haven't seen it expressed quite as succinctly and clearly as you do. Would love to hear this a little bit more about, like, how do you think about that?
Sure. So I think that the industrial economy as it is no longer sustainable because it was created in the 1870s when we were living in a very different set of conditions and capabilities. And that's the world that the industrial economic model is optimized for. And as a result of that, the value chain is linear, it's centralized, resource heavy, human run, and it's designed to maximize profitability. That model doesn't work in the 2020s and beyond. Where I think we're headed towards this new modern economy is quite the opposite of the industrial economy. So it's circular, it's decentralized, it's resource light, it's autonomous, and humans are more mediators within the system. And it's able to optimize for multiple sources of value, not just singularly focused on profitability.
And then as an incumbent business, most likely anchored in the old model, and the old type of thinking, supply chains, managerial positions. I'm curious, what do you think are the main levers we need to pull as managers in this, or as you know, business owners in this world to transition our company into the new world? What have you seen works?
Well, the innovator's dilemma still stands in that this is really difficult to do given human behaviors, and certainly our behaviors when we're inside well-established organizations that are set up to maintain themselves in their current state rather than to transform. But what I believe works well when it comes to transformation in my own experience and from seeing businesses do this is piloting. And here, I love the advice I once received from professor of organizational behavior, Herminia Ibarra, which is, don't come up with a grand plan, just pilot. And she says, it's like choosing an outfit in your wardrobe. Try something on, wear it out. If it works, great. If it doesn't, put it back, forget about it, try something else on the next day. And that we can so often be overwhelmed by what is happening and think we need to do something really big, whereas starting small and building on that is actually the way that we can move forward.
If you look at organizations, at companies, when they pilot, what we see a lot when companies embark on their innovation and disruption journey, whatever that might look like, that they're very well intended and they tend to do a lot of things. They get to the what we like to call rapid prototyping, you're piloting, the putting on the dresses. But then they fail to be able to, once they found a dress which fits, to actually scale that up for various internal reasons. Have you found ways to mitigate that challenge, ways to overcome this, to actually get companies to not just do it at the edges, but then bring it back into the core?
I would actually love to hear your experience with this, what works, because it's a good question. I think the shiny new piloted project is cute when it's just a side thing, but it becomes quite threatening inside organizations when it starts to grow and take over. So I would say what's really important is to make sure it has air cover and financing. I think this is why a lot of businesses end up spinning out what they create into separate entities.
Interesting. You said something earlier, which ear prick up, because it's related to something you wrote also about in your last research report. And it kind of, when I read it in the research report, I was like, that's a really interesting position you're taking, where you essentially say, we're either talking about the transition towards a sustainable system or systems. You essentially say, like, we either adapt or we don't. And if we don't, we're screwed. And I think this is such an interesting black and white contrast, which a lot of people don't like to make. Can you say a little bit more about, like, your thinking about the inherent challenges for us as leaders to actually adopt, and how do we overcome those?
Well, I think it takes a crisis moment to overcome. So I, you know, have a love-hate relationship with a lot of the disruptive developments like climate that are destroying what we love at a rapid pace. And how do we even take that on board? But at the same time, human behavior has proven that it needs that crisis and the pressure to really come together for change, like we saw in the pandemic. So while we'd love to think that we're capable of acting while we have some breathing space, often it's when we don't that things happen.
So do we need to create crisis moments to actually shock us out of our complacency?
Well, what I tried to do in Disruption Dinner is to bring that experience forward. So the concept of the dinners where we experience the changing food system in a meal and have a conversation about it is this notion of, if we could go forward 10 years and be suddenly in the 2-degree world, we would go back to the present moment and do so much differently, because we have no idea what that is going to look like. And we also have no idea how precious the time we're living in right now is. So with the dinners, I try to bring that experience using all of our senses to life. You know, this is where we're headed. And with that knowledge, what can we now do today? So I'm not sure how to do this in many other different settings, but the more we can begin to visualize what 10 years down the road looks like, put ourselves in that scenario, I think the better actors we will all be today in getting ahead of some of those changes to come.
That's interesting. So are you subjecting... I'm really curious about your disruption dinners. Unfortunately, given the geographic distance between the two of us, it's relatively hard for me to attend one. But I'm curious, are you subjecting your participants to an actual food experience, which is 10 years into the future?
Yes, exactly. So we go on a journey through ecosystems and around the world, but also through 3 different scenarios. So there are some dishes that are doomsday. If we don't act, what will we be eating? There are other dishes that are the transition to a modern economy, but a completely synthetic world. So Silicon Valley's vision brought to life for a techno future. And there's another scenario, which is also a modern economy, but it's one in which we work together with nature and it's a regenerative model. What are we eating in that world? So with these 3 different tastes, the 3 different paths, we can then all come back together again in 2021 and have a think about how we're positioning ourselves now and how our actions today lead to these different outcomes.
That's so fascinating. I love the embodiment of a future state you're creating with a disruption dinner. It also reminds me, interestingly, to a conversation we had on this podcast with the leader of the innovation unit at Brecas, one of the largest conglomerates in Peru, who talked a lot about what he sees as parallel worlds, this idea of, like, what can we learn in our world from experiences and insights from other related, often unrelated, actually, fields. Super fascinating. I'm curious, if you don't mind, if we can stay in the sustainability piece a little longer, because clearly this is one of your focus areas with much of your work. Can you talk a little bit more about how do you see the current moment in terms of where do businesses actually are on this journey to sustainability, because ESG is such a buzzword these days. It has literally become the new blockchain, I think, for many companies. And it's like everybody talks about it. And it feels to me a little bit like checkboxing. You know, like people are like, yeah, sure, we do ESG. I'm curious, how do you see this? And where do you see the gap between where we are today and where we need to be?
The will is there. It has changed dramatically in the last couple of years. No longer are we shrugging this off, saying that's not my responsibility. I have witnessed a level of engagement that one could only dream about a few years ago. But there's a lot of noise around what it is sustainability means. It's complex and it's not easy to get up to speed on everything that sustainability includes, let alone what our role within that is and how we can be strategic in taking action. So in the paper that I just put out, the objective there was to help people along the journey that I have gone on over the last 5 years, which began with this idea of, oh my God, the industrial economy is no longer sustainable. We're therefore headed into doomsday. I very quickly went into a state of despair with that line of thinking. And subsequently, I've learned about how our incredible informational and technological capabilities are coming together to enable us to create different outcomes. And I'm seeing how that is leading to this economic transformation and the modern economic system. So where I think the gap is right now, and a lot of the conversations I have on sustainability, is I'm still finding people in that state of the industrial economy isn't sustainable. We are headed towards doomsday. So why don't we all just revert back to the 1800s? And not use power. Right. Don't eat anything if it's not a plant that's grown in your backyard. Just this, and I appreciate the eco anxiety and the reasons for that. And I think making sacrifices in our personal consumption can be important, but big picture, we need to create an economic system that works for 8 billion people in a warmer world. And how do we do that? So I think the more we can engage people around creating what's going to take us forward, rather than I see the ESG movement and a lot of the talk on sustainability about almost let's take ourselves back because we were safe in the 1800s, which, you know, that doesn't work and it's not strategic.
Yeah, also just pointing out life expectancy in the 1800s was like what, 30 years or something?
Yeah.
Or 35 maybe if you're lucky. Yeah, I always marvel when people talk about the good old days. I'm like, really? Like, how much of that is your perspective? With the leaders you work with, talking about sustainability, talking about the future, getting them out of potentially doomsday, which I agree is for many, I think they think about it and it paralyzes them. You just can't move out of it. You're just, oh my God, we're doomed. What can we do? I'm curious, what is the crux for you? How do you get them out of that thinking? How do you get them to be hopefully optimistic, maybe cautiously, but hopefully optimistic about the future? How do you take them there?
I like to help people out of the mindset, again, that I was in of I must walk to work, become vegan, change my electricity provider. You know, again, all those things are great, but I was ignoring what I was doing on a daily basis with my professional talents and passions and abilities, and was forgetting that that is my most valuable resource and what I have to contribute in this profound moment in time. So the conversations I like to have begin with, what are you passionate about? Where do your talents lie? What fires you up? And then going back to connect the dots. Okay, let's connect the dots between those passions and talents and sustainability, or as I think about it, these disruptive developments that are reshaping the economy. And once we begin to do that, then we can really think about what contribution can I make towards getting us on a sustainable path forward, based on something that I'm truly passionate about. And then it's no longer doom and gloom, this is depressing, but so inspiring that I can contribute.
One of the interesting challenges I find often is, how do you align expectation and reality in terms of timelines? As in, weirdly, a lot of stuff happens much faster than we think. That's all the exponential deception. And on the other hand, lots of stuff actually doesn't happen quite as fast. And this molecular biology, as in creating meat in petri dishes or in fermentation tanks. That seems to be one of those things which, at least in my world, in the world I've been exposed to at Singularity University, was always, oh, it's coming, you know, it's 2 years out. And then it's always 2 years out every next year. And there's currently a big controversy around how scalable is this even? How much do we have the technology ready to actually scale this up? Despite the fact that we, can we do it? That's a question which I think we have a clear yes on it now. But again, like, scalability is an interesting challenge. I'm curious, how do you think about, how do you conceptualize this whole idea between what is hype, what is real, where are we on these timelines, and where do we need to put ourselves as leaders in understanding these timelines, and also, you know, shifting our resources towards that crux point where we have the moment where stuff becomes real and we are ready.
Yeah. So the question of where are we on the S curve? Are we truly at that moment where it's going to take off, or are we much farther away from that than we might think? I like to think about propensity for change. And what I mean by that in more simple terms is tipping point moments. So there, I think, is going to be a moment where cultivated meat takes off. I don't think we're quite there yet, but I do think it's going to be a tipping point that comes from outside developments, just like mRNA vaccines. We've had them for years as a possibility, and it takes that moment for suddenly everyone to come together, throw some resources behind it, relax regulation, and it's scaled overnight. And I don't know what that moment is for meat, but we're in a precarious situation with the food supply globally. And I don't think it's going to be long before there are considerable supply chain shocks that cause those sort of moments. And I don't think it'll be global. I think you'll find certain geographies get there and go for it. Singapore is one that is putting a lot of resource behind that. So it's impossible to know. But I think we can get a better sense by thinking about what are going to be the factors that would tip this into a state of mass rollout.
Interesting. And probably related, if I'm a leader in an organization, I would come to you and say, Hannah, I'm somewhat overwhelmed by this whole innovation disruption thing. I don't even know where and how to start. What are you, and probably it's kind of like a summarization essentially of the conversation we just had. I mean, in practical terms, like, what do you tell people? Where do they start? How do they start? How do they should think about the
figure out where you are on the systems map. So it's okay. It's where are you now, and having that awareness. So, you know, I find this framework infinitely helpful for myself, of the paradigm shift in the economy from an industrial to modern system, and where do we sit within that? What role are we playing? And then from there, geographically, where am I and what sector am I? And so how, therefore, are these big disruptive changes impacting me the most? So knowing where we are, and if you're an investor in sustainable investing, we used to call this know your exposure. So if you have an investment portfolio, go through it line by line and know the companies that you hold and start to classify them in terms of where they sit in this big picture. I think that's what stops us from starting, is we don't know where we are to begin with.
Let me ask the last question, because and it kind of goes full circle to the report you just put out, the research in this paper, which I found very refreshing. You've got this black and white scenario. Either we get it or we don't. So either we actually have a chance doing these things in a very sustainable way and make sure that humanity prospers for the next whatever period, or we're kind of doomed. If you zoom out, how bullish or bearish are you on businesses and maybe humanity to get it right?
Well, I of course set up the dichotomy for conversational purposes, but the answer is we'll muddle through. Okay. And it'll be a mix. We're going to experience all scenarios, I'm sure. So that's the view, is a blended average of all of them. And I don't really know on your question of optimistic or pessimistic. I think it depends on the day. What I do know is there are going to be incredible losses, but there are also going to be unimaginable gains. So I am going into the period ahead wide-eyed and bracing for impact.
Hannah, on that note, I think that's a perfect summarization of our conversation. I'm super excited about the future. I'm also somewhat wary about some pieces of it. This was deeply insightful. Thank you so much. I loved our conversation and where we took it, talking about sustainability, talking about systems change, talking about the practicalities of it. I also loved your disruption dinner. Just as a quick note for everybody who's hearing this, do check out the notes we have for this podcast. Hannah publishes an enormous amount of information, anything from the aforementioned research papers to you've got a whole video series on disruption, which is really, really, really well done and highly recommended watching. So we'll make sure that we have all of that in the show notes. And so if anyone wants to dig deeper into Hannah's world and into Hannah's brain, that's the way to do it. Hannah, thank you so much. This was super insightful.
Thank you. I'm really grateful for the invitation.
Hey, it's Pascal. Thanks for tuning in on this episode of Disrupt Disruption. If you want more, check out the other episodes we have on this podcast. And if you liked it, do us a favor. Go on your podcasting platform of choice, iTunes, Google Play, whatever it is, and leave a quick review. It helps tremendously with getting the insights from our guests out into the world. If you have any questions, send me an email. You can reach me at pascal@finet.com. Thank you so much for listening, and I will hear you here soon.